Hello, Planeswalkers, and welcome to episode 23 of the Daily MTG Podcast. I'm your host, Trick Jared. Here are my two co-hosts, Tifa Robles and Gavin Verhey. How are you guys?
Great.
Doing fantastic.
Good, good. I'm excited. We have another very popular guest in the booth for this episode. We have the head designer of R&D, Mr. Mark Rosewater. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great. I'm excited because you're here. You're one of my favorite people to talk to. You're so great. You're so energetic. You just love this game so much. Going out on a boom with the awesome set Theros, which has been very well received. And it's the second, would you say this is the second of our top-down design sets?
It is not the second of our top-down design sets. It is the fourth, the third block. So early on in Magic, Richard Garfield, the very first expansion ever made, was called Arabian Nights. Mm-hmm. And it was Arabian Nights, even trying to capture the tales of Arabian Nights. That was a true top-down in that it had Aladdin and Sinbad, and he was actually trying to capture as was. Since then, we started doing top-down, meaning we're trying to take a real-world influence and flavor it to capture something. Our first actual top-down was Champions of Kamigawa block,
right,
which did not go over all that great. It's design-wise, one of our big misses in my mind. Then we did Innistrad, and then we did Theros. So This is our third block that's a top-down block.
Gotcha.
I consider it our second successful top-down block.
Fair enough. So we mentioned you're the head designer of R&D. Let's talk a little bit about what that means for those who don't know who you are.
Okay, so there's a design team of seven people.
Seven people. That has to be weird for you to say, considering, it used to be just you.
It used to be me, and, I got half a kid's time. But anyway, there's a design team of seven people. I have a manager that manages them, but I oversee the technical work and sort of I'm in charge of all the sets. What do they do? What are they about? What are the blocks about? What are the themes? What are the mechanics? I oversee all that.
Right.
And we now do not just design. We do what's called advanced design, where we design before we design. One day we'll do advanced design. We're not there yet. Pre-advanced design. And so basically I'm in charge of just what do the cards do?
Right.
And I'm in charge of the design team. That's
okay.
My job.
Speaking of design teams, Theros was your 17th lead design.
It was. Yes, it was. So, one of the cool things about working on Magic, I just celebrated my 18th anniversary at Wizards, not too long ago.
That's awesome.
And one of the fun things about this job is that people are like, don't you get tired after 18 years? I'm like, no. Every set is very, very different.
Right.
And Theros was, I had done Innistrad 2 years earlier, which was another top-down set. But one of the things I believe, and I believe really strongly, is that one of the ways you get good designs is always start from someplace different. The way the human brain works is that fires little neurons, and if you attack problems from the same way, you get the same answers because your brain will just solve it the same way. So the way to get new and innovative things is just go, let's do something we've never done before. So this set was like, let's do Greek mythology.
Right.
And as a kid, I loved Greek mythology. I was a big, big fan of it. I've read a lot of books on it. So I was pumped. I was very excited to do Greek mythology. And so one of the big challenges was, okay, blank piece of paper, Greek mythology. What does that mean? And trying to figure out, how do we capture Greek mythology? And kind of the big turning point I got, ironically, was in the library. My daughter was in the library. I was helping her find a book. And I stumbled upon, the kids' version of, kids' intro to Greek mythology. And the subtitle of the book was Gods, Heroes, and Monsters.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, And that really cracked it for me. That is the essence of Greek mythology is there's the Greek gods, and you have to represent them. There's the heroes, and then they're key to all the stories. And the monsters, the heroes got to fight somebody. And then once I thought of it that way, I chopped the set up into three pieces, and we figured out how to do each of those pieces.
That's funny. Inspiration in the most unlikely of places.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about what you learned. You learned something from every new set. That's part of the wonderful thing about this whole game and about making the game. You said this was the second successful top-down design, and the fourth time we've done it, the third time since you've been here. Let's talk about some of the lessons that you got out of this. What do you think is the biggest lesson that we as R&D and that as Wizards took away from the Theros block that we did for top-down design?
Well, Champions of Kamigawa, while I think it was obviously we made some mistakes, you learn from your mistakes. I'm a big, big believer that mistakes are great teaching tools. What Kamigawa had taught us was we wanted to do a world inspired by Japanese mythology. And the creative team and the people spent a lot of time and energy studying Japanese mythology. But what we had done at the time was we didn't do the most obvious thing.
Right.
And we did things that were true to Japanese mythology, but weren't what we call resonant, meaning the average person just didn't know it.
Right.
And what we've discovered, the big lessons of Champions of Kamigawa is, when you say to the public, we're doing something, you want them to go, oh, I hope it's blah, 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 and they show up, and that is exactly what they think it is.
Gotcha.
And so what we learned with Innistrad and Theros was, very first meeting for both Innistrad and Theros, I said to my team, okay, let's write on the board, what do you expect? What do you expect of Gothic horror? What do you expect of Greek mythology? What has to be there? And we filled up the board, like, what would you expect to see? And like, for example, with Theros, we wrote down all the creature types you expect to see. You know, I want to see Gorgons and Centaurs and Pegasus and Minotaurs and, you know, there's a long list of things that you would expect to see in a Greek set. Also, we wanted to see the gods, wanted to see the heroes, we wanted to see, you know, Perseus and Theseus, and I mean, while we know we don't do the exact same characters, we do want to capture the flavor. Like, there's a guy who he's slaying the Minotaur, you know, we want to capture that idea.
Yep.
We do our own version. The gods aren't the Greek gods, they're our version of the gods. And a big realization was trying to say, okay, what do people expect? And then, what do we want to deliver? What makes it magic?
Right.
And so the big moment for me in Theros was saying, okay, it's about the gods. The gods are the most important thing of Greek mythology. Well, what's magic's key center? The color pie.
Right.
Okay, well, let's take the gods and the color pie and mash them together. What do you get? Well, something pretty cool. Like, if magic exists in these worlds and people have gods, well, the gods would represent the magic. Well, who is the red god?
Right.
And what does he do? And the creative team spent a lot of time figuring out. I came to the conclusion early on I wanted to do 15 gods. I wanted 5 major gods and 10 minor gods.
Right.
The major gods would be monocolor, the minor gods would be two-color. The reason I wanted the minor gods was the pantheon is very important in Greek mythology, and by doing 15 gods, I got 5 gods per set.
Right.
You know, do got a self a set, so that's important, and I thought it'd be exciting that all the Greek mythology sets would have a cycle of gods. And we had just done Return to Ravnica, two-color play was very, very big. Oh, well, doing a cycle of minor gods that are two-color, we got to throw a bone to all the people that have the two-color decks.
Right.
And you talked about delivering on expectations. There are cards in there that aren't even really Greek tropes, like Krakens, right? Like, there's a Kraken
right
in there, and that's not even a Greek trope. You might not know that, but it's not. And it's in there because it's just what you would expect to see based on what's common in media.
It's a common trope, but that's because of, so what happens in pop culture is Clash of the Titans was a movie back in the 80s.
Right.
And they did a remake recently. And in it, the classic line, release the Kraken,
right?
And now, while there were sea serpents in Greek mythology, Krakens are actually Scandinavian.
Yep.
And so they took something and they sort of blended things together, and people just didn't know. And so now, if we do a Greek set, up on the board, we roll Kraken. And when someone rolls Kraken, I go, you know, guys, Krakens aren't Greek mythology. And they're like, well, yeah, but if we don't have a Kraken, people will get upset.
Right.
And so part of resonance is meeting expectation. Not necessarily reality, but what people expect.
Right.
Another classic example was when we did zombies in Gothic horror. If you actually look at the source material, like Frankenstein is more an example of a zombie from that style. And Frankenstein, by the way, wasn't dumb. People think of Frankenstein as being, Frankenstein's monster. The actual monster was, like, intelligent and had, like, philosophical discussions.
Yeah.
But people know the universal, you know, like, I'm Frankenstein. And so we knew that, okay, we have to deliver on that, and zombies, we're delivering what I call Dawn of the Dead zombies, which have nothing to do with Gothic horror whatsoever.
Right.
But, you know, you better see these slow, you know, brain-eating zombies that people expect. So part of capturing is not solely capturing the source, but what people think of the source. And that is interesting because pop culture plays a lot into that.
Yeah, well, and on top of that, I mean, you're not building a literal Greek mythology set. Like you said, you're building the magic Greek mythology.
Yes.
So you can take any trope that you want and put it into that.
Well, you can, but you have to be careful. So one of the things, I'll point out something we actually did in Theros, which is the creative team wanted to blend some magic stuff in that wasn't completely rooted in Greek mythology. And so the Valianin are actually in Theros, the lion people.
The cat people.
The cat people. And so that was us saying, oh, well, there's a lot. We, the creative team felt like it kind of matched a lot of sensibility, but it's not. No one in Greek mythology to see that, but like we're trying to put our magic stamp on things, and like just like we mixed the gods with the color pie, you know, we wanted to have a Greek world, but hey, it's our world. We're not step for step doing Greek mythology. We're doing an inspired by Greek mythology world.
You talked a lot about Innistrad, and of course, one of the things that players were excited about with Theros was that it was another set that was both you and Eric Lauer working together. Eric Lauer's been in R&D for several years, and of course, you guys have worked together very much. How much do you enjoy getting to work with him, and how do you guys work together as a team?
Oh, we work very well together. Eric is fun. I mean, Eric, I knew Eric from back in his pro player days.
Right.
Before Eric worked here, he was a pro player, had a couple top eights. And so I knew Eric from those days. What happened was I got Randy Bueller in the building, and Randy ended up getting Eric in the building many years later. They were friends back in Pittsburgh, or from Philadelphia. And so what happened was, Eric came in, and he's been here now 5 or 6 years.
A while, yeah.
Yeah, he's been here a while. He's one of the more of the developers who's been here the longest. And he and I first started working together like on Innistrad. It was his first large set lead.
Right.
He had done some core sets, but this was his first standalone large set lead. And he and I worked really well together. One of my big philosophies is I believe that developers are a second set of eyes that just make your set better.
Yep.
That the job of design is design a set, let development do its job. Every once in a while you step in if you see something happening that you think is varying from what your vision is. But most of the, let development do its job, you know, make your comments few and far between because, look, don't just, there are some people in the past who have stepped in like, don't change that. I'm like, no, understand what the important part is. And the development, if you let them do their job, will make your set better.
Yep.
You know, work with them to make your set better. They're not harming your set. They're making your set better.
Right. You design for a reason. They develop for a reason, right?
Exactly, yes. And Eric is very, very good. What Eric is especially good at is taking what you have done and figuring out how to execute on it better. Because a lot of times what happens, my metaphor is that designers are like deck builders. Mm-hmm. That they have a neat idea for a deck, and they build it. And the developer is more deck tuners. They're like, oh, well, if your goal is to do this, I would take these 3 cards, I'd put these 3 cards in. You know, that'll more efficiently do what you want.
Right.
And the classic example I use from Design Innistrad has a really good example where I wanted the vampires to be red-black. I wanted them to be aggressive. But the vampires we actually made weren't as aggressive as they needed to be. And so what Eric said is, oh, well, let's figure out how to make them. You want them to be the aggressive tribe. And then he added in the Slith ability, that when you do damage, you get +1/+1 counter.
Right.
And said, okay, let's give them an ability that says, hey, you have to be aggressive. And it pushed it to be more aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
So what Eric did, like, just took what I wanted the set to do and didn't quite do and made it more in that line. Eric comes and talks to me. He doesn't make big changes without talking to me and says, I want to do this. How do you feel about that? And that, you know, 95% of the time, I'm like, awesome, that's a great suggestion. And then maybe 5%, I'm like, oh, well, here's why I wouldn't do that, and here's the problem at hand. And then he'll try to find another solution.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I remember Aaron talking about in his article about Hero's Downfall, about the black instant that kills a creature or a planeswalker.
Right.
And him trying to figure out where it fit in this set. And this is a perfect example of what you were talking about, where
yeah.
He came to you and you said the key phrase that made him realize how it works out. You said, killing a planeswalker is a rare event. That if he's able to put that at the rare slot, then it doesn't have the impact that normal removal spells do.
It was, Eric came to me and said, we're having a problem with black. Black has 3 weaknesses right now. It can't kill artifacts, it can't kill enchantments, and it can't kill planeswalkers.
Right.
And I said, oh, okay, well, crystal clear, if we want to let black deal with one of them, planeswalkers make sense.
Right.
Black deals in death. Well, planeswalkers die. So,
yep.
You know, it feels like killing planeswalkers should be a black thing of the 3 of those. And what I said to him is, all I care about is, it shouldn't be something that happens too often.
Okay.
And so I said to him, it should be a rare event. And I didn't mean, I don't want to see it a common and uncommon, because planeswalkers only is a mythic, right?
Right.
I don't like cards to say, hey, I'm referencing this thing that's like multiple rarities away from me. So I said, just make it a rare thing. And I literally didn't mean a rare thing.
Okay.
Because I didn't want it to be, I don't like you open a card and you're like, ooh, I can kill a planeswalker. What's a planeswalker? I open more packs.
Right.
What's a planeswalker?
Right.
You know, that. I wanted it to be rare, too.
Yeah.
I mean, Planeswalker's a mythic.
And that comes back to New World Order, with trying to present the proper things of the proper order.
Yes. Well, one of the things that we realized, it took us a while to really cement in our head, is rarity is one of the most important tools a designer and a developer have at their fingertips. Because we don't control what order people see things.
Right.
And, like, there's a very... It's tough to think about that concept, that I don't control what you see and in what order you see it. I'm making a set, but you can see any card first. So how do we craft what we're doing? How do we make the audience have the experience we want? Like, we're designing this experience. And the key is, it's rarity.
Right.
Which is, your comments have to carry the weight of what you're trying to do. And one of my phrases is, you know, if your theme is not a common, it's not your theme. Then you have to convey so that people can see it, so they get it. And if I have this, like, our champions coming out made this mistake as well.
Right.
Champions, pick on Champions Day. We have this theme of legendary, right? And the problem was, fine, we made all the rare creatures legendary, but how many packs do you have to open to figure out that all of the rare creatures are legendary?
Right.
10? 15? Like, you might buy the set and then never realize the theme that was our theme.
Right.
And that, one of the things that made talk to me was, we really, like, we do, whenever we build a set, we do commons first. We do an all-common playtest
yep.
first. If you can't convey your theme in that all-common playtest, well, then you're failing.
Yeah, that's interesting. I had no idea.
I didn't know that the champions coming out thing. I didn't know that until years later, and I played a ton back in
champions. Oh, I knew the champions thing. I didn't know the all commons playtest.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's how we start.
And what's also interesting is how I think most people find a rare they like when they're like, I'm going to build a deck around this card. Like, I don't think most people are like, I really like this common. I'm going to build a deck around this common.
Right.
Well, and one of the reasons that's so is we have limitations. So New World Order says, so we had a big problem we had to solve, which was Magic was not gaining new players, or it was gaining them at a slower percentage than it used to. What's going on? And what we realized was, when you start to play Magic, you are at zero. You know nothing. And you have to get to the point where you understand Magic. As Magic got, as the years went by and we added more things, it was getting more complex. But the beginner was always at the same point. There's no change in the beginner.
Right.
So we're just making a bigger and bigger gap to get from don't know anything to know enough to play. And the big realization we made, that place and I figured this out, was, oh, the key was commons, which is, when you open a pack, 10 of your 15 cards on average are common, and so a beginner, they only open a couple packs, two-thirds of their cards are common. Well, if we could control how complex those were, well, for the beginning player, we are way making their experience easier. But for advanced players, buying a box or two boxes, whatever, I mean, they're seeing all the rares, they get to see the higher rarity cards, and so for them, oh, it's not just about the commons, it's about everything, and so they get to see the complexity, but it's hidden from the beginning players.
Yeah.
And so New World Order says, look, let's make a line and tow it and make sure commons aren't too complex.
Theros is on the higher end of complexity. Do you think that you guys are nudging that line with New World Order, or do you still hold to that?
Well, I mean, I think why people think it's more complex is there's one mechanic that is somewhat complex, and we put a common, which was Bestow.
Right.
The reason Bestow is a common is it is the glue that holds everything together. One of the problems we had, originally Bestow wasn't in the set, and the problem we had was we had all these auras you wanted to put on your creatures, and we had these creatures, and we had these creatures that wanted you to put auras on them, but you just couldn't get enough auras in your deck that the math worked.
Okay.
And so Billy Moreno in Advanced Planning had come up with this Bestow mechanic, which was these enchantment creatures that became auras that was going to premiere Born of the Gods. And then Eric and I independently realized the math just didn't work. We're like, oh, we have to have Bestow cards, so we moved them back.
Okay.
Now, one thing we did do is we simplified them in that the most basic of Bestow cards are actually in Theros. We experiment a little more. So if you enjoy Bestow, the later sets do a little more with Bestow than we did up front. We try to make it very simple. But the reason it feels complex is what we learned is we did a lot of testing. Beginners get Bestow. Bestow is not that complex in its basic, like, oh, I get it. It's an enchantment or it's a creature and then it falls off. Where it gets complex is interactions. And the beginners don't get to the place where those interactions happen all that much.
Fair.
But the more experienced players are like, okay, well, I have a god, and Bestow. And like, you start getting all these combinations that get much more complex.
Right.
And so Bestow has the ability to be complex in situations, but it is, we've learned it's not too complex in understanding how the base functions. And so I'm less worried about complexity that comes from sort of higher level complexity than I'm worried about, like, can I understand how to play the card?
I see. So the New World Order isn't purely just what's on the card, but how the card is utilized also.
Right, right. The big part of New World Order is if I go to beginner and I show them this card, how hard is it to understand?
Right.
As long as the commons are something beginners get, I'm not worried about more experienced players. They can handle plenty.
Right.
So I'm not worried about cards interact in complex ways. Look, hey, if you're signed up for Magic, you're signed up for cards will complexly interact and do things. But I want to make sure that the new person gets the gist of what's going on. And I felt Bestow is pushing a little bit. I'm not saying Bestow, I don't want all mechanics to be as complex as
Bestow.
Sure,
no, absolutely.
And the reason Bestow is a common is the set didn't work without it. Meaning if the set worked without Bestow, I might have put Bestow at uncommon and not had common Bestow cards. That could have happened. But I needed it to work. The set didn't work without Bestow, so I had to push them down to common. But if you'll notice, I surrounded it with simpler stuff. Like, our mechanics other than Bestow are pretty simple.
Yep.
You know, they have some strategic complexity, but, well, what do they do? It's pretty straightforward. They're not, I don't have a lot of other mechanics in the set. I'm like, what? How does that work?
Yep.
I mean, Bestow was kind of where we knew our complexity lied, so we surrounded it with simpler stuff.
At what point did Scry come into the plan for Theros? Was that an early decision? Was that
No. So what happened was, when the set got handed off from design to development, it had four mechanics in it.
Mm-hmm.
It had Monstrosity, it had Bestow, it had Heroic, and it had Devotion.
Okay.
It did not have Scry in it. What happened was, in development, very early in development, Eric figured out that we had a lot of mechanics that wanted things to combo together. Like, you wanted the creatures and get the auras, or you wanted the creature and get the spells to do the heroic. And, you know, there was a lot of combination in the set. The set had a lot of, you want to play X with, you know, A with B. And so what he realized was we needed a smoothing mechanic to help to make that happen more often. And so he came to me and said, I want to add a mechanic. I said, oh, okay, what do you want to add? He goes, look, it'll be a returning mechanic, so that way it won't be something new. And I go, oh, okay. I go, but he goes, do you care what it is? I go, well, it just has to fit the theme. It has to be Greek mythology. Right. If it's Greek mythology, I'm fine with it. He goes, what do you think of Scry? Like, awesome.
Yeah.
Because Greek mythology is all about omens and portents and soothsayers, and so it fit really, really well. And so, I mean, Eric said, what do you think? I said, sounds perfect, and, you know, he put it in. But all of that came into development.
Okay.
None of design did no Scrying design.
Yeah, it was one of the more quicker discussions I've actually ever seen in the pit. It was like, hey, Mark, what do you think about this? And you asked him a few questions, and then boom. You know, it was kind of putting this up the next day almost.
Yeah, I mean, if development has good ideas, and like I said, 95% of the time, the ideas are very, very good. I just rubber stamp, yeah, sounds good. That sounds great. Every once in a while, what happened is there's something that I care about that just they didn't see. One of the class examples where I forgot to say something was, in Innistrad, I had done this thing where I was isolating white, where I was trying to make the humans feel like they were all alone. So I made a whole bunch of cycles where I left white on purpose. One of those was the curses. There was supposed to be a curse in every color but white. And it was supposed to be a point of contention that white was the only one without a curse. Eric didn't know that and changed the green curse into a red curse because when he added the vampire mechanic, the green curse was called, like, curse of tastiness. and the idea was whenever a creature hits you, it gets plus one counter. And because of the vampires, it made more sense as a red thing, so he moved it to red. But he wasn't aware I was doing this thing, and I didn't explain it to him, and so there's no green curse. So when the white curse shows up in Dark Ascension, it wasn't quite as powerful to show that finally the humans are being painted for me.
Right.
So something unique in Scry with this set, even though it's a returning mechanic, most of the Scry cards are Scrying one instead of Scrying multiple cards.
Yes, that's true.
Why don't you talk a little bit about that and how that came to be here?
Once again, that's all Eric. Basically, what Eric realized was we just needed a little bit of Scry, and Scry one is way more powerful than people think it is. I know because there's cards that have Scry two and Scry three. You look at Scry one and go, ooh, only Scry one, but it is very powerful. And the way I explain that to people is, how often when you lose a game have you looked at the top card and that would have been the difference? Like, well, every game when you scry one time, well, that game would have ended differently. You know, that it's looking even one card ahead really can have a lot of impact.
Yeah.
And it was Eric's call, but I agree with him 100%.
Well, and you also have cards that you could scry one multiple times. It's not a, like, one-time effect.
Right.
I actually have a question. Why enchantments? Like, when did enchantments come into play as being a big part of the set? And how did that get implemented?
So what happened was, I had a meeting with Aaron Forsythe and Brady Dominguez. Aaron's the director of Magic. Brady is the former creative director. And we were talking about the 7-year plan. I had come up with ideas for 7 years. Year 3, which is what Theros was, I had an idea that I really liked. I thought it was an awesome, awesome idea. And Brady's like, that is an awesome idea, Mark, but the creative team can't do it. It's just beyond their capabilities. And I'm like, oh, really? And so Brady said, okay, well, in its place, since I've now dashed your idea to the rocks, we've talked about doing a Greek mythology set. Innistrad went really well. Maybe we should be doing a Greek mythology set. And Brady was the one that said, you know, maybe that's something to do with enchantments. You know, we've talked about doing an enchantment set forever. So way, way back when, during Urza Saga was actually secretly an enchantment set.
Right.
But then we dubbed it the artifact cycle, and then all these broken artifacts in it, and like, literally, there was every card type was banned in it but enchantments. So even though we technically had enchantment block, no one really counted it in some way. So we knew we wanted to do enchantment block. I liked the idea of the dream world and the gods of Greek mythology being very tied to dreams. In Greek mythology, there's a lot of dreaming about things and gods talking in your dreams. And so I walked in saying, okay, well, what if the enchantments had something to do with the gods? My big realization was, oh, what if the enchantments represent the touch and feel of the gods? And so enchantment creatures became creations of the gods, and the auras became the touch of the gods, and the gods themselves became enchantment creatures. And then it really gave this nice sheen to the set of, oh, well, the touch of the gods, because the gods are mythic rare cards. Like I said, if your theme's not a common, I can't put the gods a common, but I can put the touch of the gods a common. And so the bestow creatures and the auras and all the stuff that represented the gods interacting with the mortals were there. Like the ordeals, for example. One of the themes of the set is it's an adventure. That Greek mythology, when I sort of buried, like, dug down deep, You know, Innistrad's about dread. It's about horror. But what was Greek mythology about? It's about the sense of adventure.
Right.
Then you look at the stories, it's heroes going on quests and beating monsters. And I wanted this idea of you building something. And so the set, if you look through it, the whole set's about building up and creating things. And I wanted to create the sense of accomplishment. And so the ordeals were like, oh, well, pick your hero. Probably got heroic on him. Get an ordeal, which is the god saying, okay, Hercules, I got a task for you. Go do 12 labors. And that, you put the ordeal on your hero, and the hero levels up. And then, you know, as he does his ordeals, he gets better and better. And, like, pretty soon, he's this giant hero that can fight the monster that's monstrosity'd up.
That's awesome. I love the enchantment theme. And so I was really excited when I came into Wizards and learned we were doing another enchantment block and going to give it another run. And I think we've done a great job. I'm really excited, and I want to, unless there's any other questions, I think it's time for us to start wrapping up. But I appreciate you coming on, and I can't wait to talk to you again next year.
Yes.
Since this will be the last episode of this year, we'll be back next year. And when we come back, we'll be starting off with Born of the Gods, the next set.
Yes, the next set. So one of the things I got to let people know is there is a plan. Like, when we do a block, we plan the whole block. There's things going on. And I will say this. There's things that people have been asking me for that saying, why didn't you do X, Y, or Z in Theros? And I'm giggling inside, and I'm like, well, it's in Born of the Gods, or it's in Journey into Nyx. So right. Things you want are coming.
Yeah. Thanks again for coming. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you want to hear this episode or more episodes, visit our website, dailymtg.com. If you'd like to talk to me, I'm on Twitter, TrickMTG. You can find the rest of us on Twitter.
At Tifa Lyon.
At Gavin Bruhe.
At Morrow254.
And we will talk to you all again in 2014.
See you next year.
Have a great holiday season, guys.
Happy holidays, guys.